Hey, lurkers, just wanted to let you know that there is not going to be a new episode this week because I am going to be traveling to the Whitehall, New York Sasquatch Festival. I'm actually heading out a couple days early to give myself and Liz from So Sci-Fi and Beyond a chance to sightsee. Just a reminder, the Whitehall, New York Sasquatch Festival is September 30th, and if you're in the area, come out, say hello. It is a free event. There's a beer garden. There's supposed to be 100 vendors. There's a free bouncy house for the kids. And the weather looks like it's going to be amazing. So stop out, say hello, get some lurk apparel, and have a great time. So what I'm going to do is post the Bennington Monster episode here for you to listen to. If you've never heard it before, here's your chance. If you've heard it before, listen to it again. I picked this one because the Bennington Monster is about an hour and a half from where we're going to be. It's one of the potential areas we might check out. So I will be back next week with an all new episode. Stay tuned and keep lurking.
I fear not the dark itself, but what may lurk within it. Welcome to Lurk, bringing you creepy, strange, and bone-chilling stories with your host, Jamie Jackson.
Hey lurkers, welcome to episode 36. Today we're going to be talking about the cryptid known as the Bennington Monster, which is located in the Bennington, Vermont area. If you've been listening to us for a little while, you may think that Bennington may sound rather familiar, and you would be right. Back in episode 12, we discussed the area known as the Bennington Triangle. Now, this is an area of Vermont that is known for strange occurrences. And it's similar to the area of Massachusetts that's known as the Bridgewater Triangle. The term Bennington Triangle was coined in 1992 by a folklorist and author. He basically read about Bridgewater Triangle, where strange occurrences happen, and associated with this Bennington, Vermont area. The area is known for a lot of different strange things. If you haven't listened to episode 12, I suggest you go back and you listen to that episode, or maybe listen to it as a refresher. We are basically going to be taking a little bit closer look at the creature part of that episode here today. But the area is known for UFO sightings, mysterious disappearances, strange creatures, a man-eating rock, ghosts, murder. Basically, every topic we talk about here on the podcast, they've got it at Bennington. The area of the Bennington Triangle actually includes the area of Glastonbury Mountain. And Glastonbury Mountain has a history of being creepy. The Native Americans in the area avoided it, except to bury their dead. And they said that the four winds met there in an eternal struggle. And there is some evidence that something weird goes on because there is sudden weather changes and the plants, like the trees, grow at odd angles on the top of the mountain. So there were some strange wind patterns going on up there. Now, the Bennington Monster is basically a Sasquatch or Bigfoot type creature. Reports of it have been coming in since the 1800s. One of the first sightings took place on a rainy night on Glastonbury Mountain. There was a stagecoach with four passengers that was traveling the secluded mountain road. The rain had become extremely heavy, and that had caused the road to wash out, so the driver had to stop the coach. When he did, he got out to check to see what the damage on the road was, and while he was looking around, he notices these large footprints in the mud. They were very deep, and they had a long stride that was indicating that whatever it was must have been very big and very heavy. The other thing he made a note of was that whatever had left those prints had to have been through there recently because the rain hadn't washed them away yet, and it was raining heavy. So he's out there with his lantern light, and he's checking out these footprints, and the four passengers get out of the stagecoach to see, you know, what's going on. Because these prints, they're not quite human. They're sort of human, but not quite. So they're all out there looking, checking out these weird prints by lantern light, and the horses start spooking. They're prancing around, stomping, snorting, starting to neigh loudly. I just did that like I'm on. They started to neigh loudly. There, hey, Wilbur, there's a frickin' Sasquatch in the woods. Anyway, seriously, they are getting spooked. And if you've been around horses at all, you can tell. They know when there's a large predator. Horses are spooking. They're prancing. They're stomping. They're snorting. They're neighing. They're uneasy. And then all of a sudden, this large creature begins attacking the empty coach. The beast is banging on the side of the coach and is able to knock it completely over with just a few strikes. The passengers report that they were able to see its large, menacing eyes and heard it roar as it retreated back into the brush. Since that time, the Bennington Monster has been sighted many times. Most people, as I said, describe a creature similar to Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Some report a dark-haired creature over 6 feet tall and covered completely in hair, and some describe it as a red-haired creature. In August of 1861, there was a gorilla man scare that swept through the area, and hunting parties were formed to track down the creature. Some claim to have been close enough to shoot at the creature, but the creature managed to elude people almost as if it had supernatural powers. It was thought that there might possibly be an escaped animal of some kind, but no zoos were missing any animals, and there was never a body of the creature ever found. I'm not sure about you, but I've never heard of a supernatural gorilla creature in a zoo. But then again, if you've ever gone to any of those sideshows, they had the bearded lady, they had the Fiji mermaid, the two-headed calf, all that crazy stuff. So who knows what they had in there? But no zoos had reported anything missing, no carnivals, nothing like that reported any creature that had gotten away. There weren't any in that area to lend any credence to that theory. In 1867, I have no idea what that noise was. Seriously, I have no idea what that noise was. And I honestly don't even want to go look. All right, well, I'm going to continue talking about the Bennington Monster and just pretend that that noise didn't happen. Because I'm by myself right now recording and it's dark out. The dog's not barking, so I'm going to just pretend that it wasn't anything big. In 1867... residents reported a cave-dwelling wild man who terrorized women. The man would come down out of the woods into town, and he would open his long, ratty coat to expose his naked body to women, all while brandishing a pistol to prevent being stopped. Some people tried to claim that this wild man was responsible for some of the reports in the area, but no one mentioned that the hairy hominid was wearing a coat, the gorilla guy that they saw in 1861. There was no mention that he wore a coat. There was no mention that this wild man was covered in hair. I'm guessing if he's exposing himself to women, it's because they can see all his junk. So I'm assuming that there's a little bit of a difference in the description between the two. But I think it made it easier to say the crazy guy in the woods who's flashing women, that's really what's going on here. So the Native Americans, a lot of times when... I really don't know if this is picking that up or not. I'm not going to be able to tell probably till I go back and edit it, but there are some seriously weird noises going on. All right, well, I'm going to continue and try not to poop my pants. The Abenaki had stories of what they called the Forest Wanderer, who was said to be a giant humanoid creature that left footprints. This is an interesting comparison. It's one I never considered before. I never even thought to associate the two things that I'm going to bring up. The Algonquin had tales of the Wendigo. I never considered the Wendigo as a Sasquatch creature, but in some descriptions, the Algonquin said that the Wendigo was a hulking, hairy, man-like monster. Typically, a Wendigo is a creature, and if I get this, try to get this correct, they were created when Native Americans cannibalized other Native Americans, people. So when they did that, they in turn ended up becoming the Wendigo. And the Wendigo was a very thin, emaciated-looking creature. A lot of times they're depicted with, like, a head that's kind of like a skull of a deer or an elk with antlers. They're really scary-looking, very creepy. I've never considered them to be anything similar to a Sasquatch or Bigfoot. Bigfoot, usually, he looks like he isn't hurting for a meal, whereas the Wendigo is very emaciated. However, there was this comparison in my research in this area for the Bennington Monster. There was an Algonquin member who stated, in regards to the creature being seen in this Bennington Triangle area, that, quote, it was a giant thing, swift and covered in hair, and his eyes like two pools of blood, and there's this smell like rotting meat. Native Americans in the area also have a legend that's called Old Slippery Skin. Slippery Skin was an extraordinarily large bear that always walked on its two legs, its two hind legs. In the 1750s, a scout for Rogers Rangers wrote that the Native Americans described this creature, named for its ability to elude hunters. It was known to be mischievous, not malicious. It would rip up gardens, pull down fences, make cattle stampede. That seems like it's a little bit more malicious, especially back in the mid to late 1700s, where you need your gardens and your cattle to live. You can't go down to the corner store to get you some burger patties and manwich or bag of fries. What you grow is what you have to live off of. So if something is ripping up your gardens, ripping down your fences, forcing your cattle to run off, that's not a good thing. It also trampled crops. Again, not a good thing. So there is an account of some hunters who decided they were going to go out and find Old Slippery Skin. While they're out in the woods, they hear this thumping noise, which, if you are a Bigfoot or Sasquatch enthusiast, you could equate to the tree banging noise that is often associated with Bigfoot. So they hear this noise and they hide, and their plan is that they're going to hide, and when the creature comes by, they're going to jump out and ambush it and catch it. I don't think they were going to catch it. I think they were going to shoot it and kill it. So they're hiding and they're waiting. Unfortunately, this creature that is known by the Native Americans to be very intelligent and have an uncanny ability to elude capture, and by capture I mean being shot. So this creature, I guess, realizes that these hunters are waiting to get him. And so it doubles back and it ends up going up behind where these hunters are and rolls this large tree down the mountainside, and it just narrowly misses these guys hiding out waiting to ambush this creature. Not necessarily when you see a Bigfoot, but there are signs that are considered to be signs that Sasquatch, Bigfoot is in the area. You have the tree knocking, so that thumping noise that they mentioned, and Sasquatch has the ability to do strange things with large logs, where he takes trees and embeds them upside down into the ground, just is able to manipulate very long, large logs that most men cannot lift by themselves. So you also have this, where the creature took this large log and threw it down the mountain towards these guys. So it's showing a little bit of intelligence. I don't think a bear could really consider doing that. In my opinion, old Slippery Skin, not a bear. I would think this would be more of a Sasquatch. It's walking on two legs. That's part of its lore. That's part of the legend. It walks on two legs. It's a big hairy bear who walks on two legs. What's Bigfoot? A big hairy thing that walks on two legs. In this area, we have a history of this hairy human-like creature walking on two legs. It's smelly. It eludes hunters. And that's going to bring us to 1943. And I touched upon this next bit in episode 12, the Bennington Triangle. It's one of the mysterious disappearances, though he was found. It's more of a mysterious death. So November of 1943, a gentleman by the name of Carl Herrick, he's a 37-year-old father of five. His youngest child had just been born a few weeks previous. His youngest is only a few weeks old. And he tells his wife he's heading out to go hunt. Hunting is something he's done many, many times before. Back in 1943, I imagine that hunting in this area was a big way to stock your freezer, to stock your meat supply. So he's got five young children to feed, plus he and his wife, so there's a family of seven, and he goes out to hunt. He is a physically fit man, he's a knowledgeable hunter, and he hunted the area often. He leaves on a Tuesday, and when he didn't return home to his family, his wife contacts authorities, and a search ensued. Carl's body was unfortunately found Friday by his cousin. And the scene was an odd one. There were unusually large bear tracks in the snow near the body. Carl's rifle was leaning against a tree about 70 feet from where the body was found, and there was one spent shell cartridge. As far as Carl himself, he had some scratches on his arms and his hands, but his face was black. The people who found him concluded that he shot once at a bear and must have thought that it was dead, so he placed the rifle against the tree and approached to start dressing it out, but that the bear wasn't dead, wakes up, grabs him, and kills him. So that is the theory of the scene. When the coroner gets the body and does the autopsy, it's determined that Carl Herrick was actually squeezed to death. Basically, he was hugged by a bear and he was crushed. There was thought that the bear hugged him, dropped him, then picked him back up and hugged him some more. It was the first time in memory of the area that a bear had actually killed a man. I did a little bit of research when looking into this. There were no examples of bear death by hugging. Most bear attacks occurred July, August, and September. And bears head into hibernation October to December, depending on the food supply. We're talking November, so it's possible the bear was not hibernating. Now, bears they're not true hibernators. They will wake up throughout the winter and leave the den. So it's not like they go in, stay in the den, and never come out until spring. That's really not how bears operate. However, there is snow on the ground. So I'm going to assume that there's not a whole lot of bear activity going on. Also, in all the other bear attacks, it was described as a mauling. There was torn, ripped flesh mentioned, bites, nothing about hugging. Bears typically kill their prey by biting it in the head or the neck. Carl had no bite marks at all. The only marks were a few scratches, and bear claws are pretty significant. You're not just going to get minor scratches on your arms. Your arms are going to be torn. That's where the tearing and the ripping comes into play. You're not going to get basic scratches from a bear. I also looked into the blackened face. Now, some people may argue that decomposition can create that. However, it usually takes about 2 weeks for that to happen. We're talking Tuesday to Friday, and it's cold. There's snow on the ground. It's November in Vermont. So that slows things down. That'll slow decomposition down. Basically, the blackened face was a product of him being squeezed to death. Again, I don't think there's Care Bears running around hugging people. This whole thing is very odd. You have extremely large bear-like footprints seen around. He shoots once, no idea at what, and then he's squeezed to death, which there's no mention anywhere of any other person in the world dying by a bear hugging. Makes you wonder. That brings us to 1983, where a giant human-like figure was seen by a couple as it walked along a rocky ridge. The creature was very nimble. Its arms were much longer than average, and he appeared to be much taller than any man either one of them had ever seen before. As they watched the creature, it raised its arms above its head, waving them before turning and continuing on with great agility. A lot of people claim that this was a hoax, and that there was somebody who was playing a hoax on them. But the area where this was seen was not an area where anybody in any kind of monkey suit or gorilla suit would be able to run with the agility that it had. This is a rocky ledge. It's not a path. It's not a hiking trail. It's high up. It's very rocky. And not a place where you're going to climb up to if you're wearing a gorilla suit where you can't be as mobile as normal or see very well. 3 years later, October 1986, three college students nearly hit a creature that was 6.5 to 7 feet tall. Its body was said to be covered in collie-length hair. Its face was nearly hairless, with deep-set eyes, high cheekbones, and a white skin tone. One of the students who was in the back part of the car was able to look out the window and get a good look at the creature. And that's who said that the hair was collie-like. And by collie, they mean the long-haired collie dog. Most people know who Lassie is. And if you don't tell me because it's going to make me incredibly old. So if you've ever seen a collie before, you know how long their hair is. That's the type of hair that was covering this creature. Only it was dark brown. In 2003, Ray Dufresne reported seeing a huge hairy creature lumbering into the woods while he was driving on Route 7. He estimated it weighed 270 pounds. There were other witnesses who also came forward around the same time with a description of a similar creature. In October 2005, a father and his daughters saw an 8-foot-tall creature with a conical head cross the road 50 feet in front of them. It was covered in hair and was able to cross the road in 2 large strides. Its arms were swinging as it moved. That's pretty big. 2-lane road, you try to cross it, you're not crossing it in 2 strides. Most people have around a 2 to 3 foot stride. There's no way you can cross a road in 2 strides. But this thing did. Now these next 2 stories, these 2 accounts, creep me out a little bit as somebody who hikes. I don't ever hike alone, and most of that is because of the human element, but this story also is a good reason why you shouldn't hike alone. So sometime in the 2000s, there was a female hiker that had the sudden feeling of being watched. At the same time, she could smell what was described as a musky odor. She begins moving towards the area where her car is parked. And while she's walking back to the trailhead to her car, she can hear something following her in the trees. She said that it felt like she was actually being hunted. She was lucky enough to meet up with 2 men who were heading out to the woods to hunt, and they were nice enough to escort her back to her car. Later, they said that they didn't see any kind of creature, but they did see large areas where brush had been tramped down in a path. They also said that there was a lingering musky odor in the air. In the same area, there was another hiker who encountered two separate creatures at the same time. Feeling as though she was being watched, she looked up and saw a creature watching her from the trees. It was black and had large black eyes. Its nose was muzzle-like but smushed like a bulldog or a boxer, and it had two small pointed ears on the side of its head. In addition to that creature, there was also a taller, lankier, red-haired creature standing nearby. The second creature seemed more ape-like and stood hunched over. Both creatures made growling noises before moving into the woods. In that same area, there's also quite a few reports of creatures throwing rocks at houses late at night and things that are causing dogs to cower in terror and not want to go outside. There are many other different accounts in this area, in the Vermont, New York, that New Hampshire, that whole area there. It's not just within the Bennington area, but throughout that whole New England area of those states, there are quite a few Sasquatch sightings that have happened and are still happening even today. There's no doubt in my mind that there's something going on, that there is some unknown creature that people are seeing. The Native Americans in that area have had a history of describing strange creatures. You had the forest wanderer that was a creature that left nothing but footprints, was able to elude hunters. You have old Slippery Skin, who is that's described as a bear who walks only on two legs and has the uncanny ability to elude hunters. There's the stories of the gorilla creature back in 1861, I believe it was, who eluded hunters. They said it was almost supernatural in the way that it was able to avoid being seen, captured, caught, shot, whatever they were going to do with it. The way I see it, if you can look at the area and the Native Americans who have such a long history in an area have stories, drawings, accounts of these strange creatures, then that leads credence to the creature being a legitimate thing. Native Americans didn't make up things to draw in their cave drawings and their pictographs. They only drew what they saw. I've mentioned that before. I think it was in the Snallygaster episode that, you know, you have a thunderbird known as the Piassa, and it's part of Native American drawings. Native Americans weren't whiling away the hours by drawing made-up cartoon things on cave walls. They only drew things that they saw and encountered in real life. So I think that if you take the history of the Native American stories, you take the accounts throughout history, back in the 1800s, the accounts that are still happening today, and I don't think you have any other choice but to say that there's something strange, possibly Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever you want to call him, wandering around the mountains. So that's going to do it for this episode of Lurk. So I know I stopped the episode, but weird noises going on. I'm going to try doing something that I don't normally do while I'm recording. Certainly not while I'm sitting in my house by myself, but fingers crossed that nothing happens. But I'm going to do an impromptu EVP session here in the office, and we're going to see if I get anything. All right, you want to know something very strange? Both of my recorders are saying that they're full. Okay, so this is what's going on currently while I'm trying to do this EVP session. I have two digital recorders. They are RRDR60s. You cannot find these recorders anywhere. They discontinued them because people complained that they were recording voices that were not there. My recorders, apparently, both of them, when I just tried to record something, said that the recorders were full. Now, they hold a certain amount of minutes. You can have like 100 different clips as long as they don't total up the amount of minutes that the digital recorder is able to hold. I don't know, let's say it's 60 minutes. It's longer than that, but we'll just say 60 minutes. Both of these recorders said that they were full. I knew for a fact that they weren't full. I just thought out of, for giggles, we'll go ahead and play the last one, which I played a little bit of. I kept checking it. It was over 10 minutes long. I did not record it. There is voices in it. I didn't record it. I deleted it. I'm going to assume that it's just a case of accidentally record got hit. However, let me tell you where these recorders were kept. They are in a padded, zipped up pouch that is in my laptop bag. Now, my laptop bag is not used except transporting my laptop, which I have not done in quite some time. So I don't really know what happened. Anyway, against my better judgment, I'm going to sit here and attempt to take a take an EVP recording.
I don't mean any disrespect, I just want to have a conversation. Can you tell me your name?
Okay, well, on that note, we're going to end the episode here again, even though I ended it already. And just going to tell you to, I don't know what I'm going to tell you, because now I have to go downstairs. It's dark because I didn't turn any lights on, and nobody's home but me and the dog, who's now barking. So before I go through my normal spiel, I want to remind you that I am seeking paranormal stories. Please, even if it's a very short story, even if you think it's silly, you don't think anybody will believe you, I don't even have to tell anybody your name. Send me an email at lurkpodcast@yahoo.com. Let me know your story. Send it through direct message and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And I will include that in the Christmas Eve episode. I am going to be telling ghost stories, trying to bring back that tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas. I do have a story that I will be getting from my dad. I know my cousin Kelly, who is one of my partners in crime, has some stories I'm going to get from her. She won't tell them to me here on the actual podcast, but I am going to share at least one of her stories. We've had so many strange adventures, there are plenty of stories. And I'll share some of the other stories with you about different investigations. As always, you can find us wherever it is that you listen to your favorite podcast, and you can find us at lurkpodcast.com. On the website, you can find links to our social media. As I said, we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I always suggest that you like or follow us on one or all of those. We have merch at lurkpodcastmerch.com. Go get you a hoodie for the winter months. Keep yourself warm. In fact, one of our loyal lurkers, Liz, that's a lot of alliteration there. My loyal lurker, Liz, she had her hoodie on just the other day, and I said, that's a really nice sweatshirt you got there. I don't even have one, so I probably should get on there and buy some merch. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. So until next time, keep lurking. Just not at my house.